You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times.
Protocol 66 must not be discovered by the Jedi.
Yes, Lord Tyrannus.
You must face the gravest of journeys tomorrow, Bond.
The ancient homeworld of the Sith.
Hello, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi and Master Plo Koon, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. Yes, this is the podcast you're looking for, most definitely, Obi-Wan.
The name's Rex, but you'll call me Captain or Sir. You're listening to A Cup of the Clone Wars.
Hi, this is Jason Ward of MakingStarWars.net, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to A Cup of Clone Wars, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars The Clone Wars through a critical lens. On today's show, Jason Ward of MakingStarWars.net joins us to discuss the phenomenal Yoda arc and the end of Season 6 of The Clone Wars, as well as the series. Jason is no stranger to Star Wars fans, as his site is one of the leaders in Star Wars news, discussion, and rumors. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Well, it is great to have you, my friend. We were all just talking before this, and the last time we actually got to chat with you, you know, through Skype or something, was through the Kessel Run last year, which was such a great hit and so much fun, and got to meet so many other podcasters, and you're just making waves all the time with Star Wars and Star Wars fandom. Your site is definitely one for people to go to and check out. And what is some of the secrets of your success?
You know, I don't know. I think it's just enthusiasm, really. I update a lot, obviously. And I think it just has to do with the fact that I love Star Wars so much that I can't stop talking about it.
We understand.
Right. Your coffee with Kenobi. Of course you do.
So perfect. Well, guys, there's so much to discuss. This is one of the arcs, maybe more than any arc we've talked about for the entire season 6 of A Cup of Clone Wars, where we truly could take each episode individually and talk about it for a couple hours at a time. But we're going to try our best and focus here. And let's just start right off the bat. And Jason, we'll start with you. What are your overall opinions of this arc?
Wow. I mean, as far as it goes, I think this might be the Clone Wars arc for me that really elevated the show in a way that it really truly sits beside the 6 films that we already have. Hmm. Like, this one was important. You know, everything about it was something that I feel like if they did a new DVD box set or Blu-ray box set of the films, like, this should be included because it was so, so deep and it gave so much to Yoda's thought process and what's going on with him in the saga and about the Force in general. It's just so I could talk all day about, like, gush about it, about how great it is. And for me, it was just like probably my favorite Star Wars thing since I saw Revenge of the Sith in the theaters.
Wow, that's amazing praise. Corey, what about you? Did it have a similar effect on you?
Yeah, Jason, you hit it right on the head there. It really flows really nicely into, obviously, episode 3, the film, and it just even the music and the animation and just the iconic planet of Dagobah, you know, really toss me back into the films and Yoda himself too. Just, I mean, it just I don't know a whole lot about Yoda. I mean, he's always kind of been that top tier character that we just. He's all wise and all knowing, and he just showed a whole different sides of him and his growth as a Jedi and, you know, his mystery as far as, you know, seeking out what's going on and mysteries of the Force. And it certainly was a powerful arc, I think, because, like I said, all the questions that it raised and all the answers it kind of gave out. And of course, we get to meet Qui-Gon Jinn again, so it's nice to be able to hear his voice.
That might be
You both said it very well. This is the bar for excellence of Star Wars animation, this particular arc. And it actually is gorgeous. If you're watching it in HD or on an iPad or Apple TV or whatever, it looks fantastic. The music and all the notes, literally, that it hits that reminds you of John Williams' score. Yoda is a fascinating character. He's enigmatic, as you mentioned, Corey. This could easily go along with the box set of all six films because there's that interconnective tissue, and it puts the glue to some of these things, particularly with the midichlorians and the nature of the Force. It's a gorgeous couple of episodes. It's the best. What can you say? So the first thing I'd like to focus on, now that we've got our overall opinions squared away, is Qui-Gon Jinn and what he brings to this arc. And Corey, what did he do for you, particularly with having Liam Neeson back in the fold?
Liam Neeson, he has that deep voice that just is brings so much fullness to the character. And it was really great to hear. I'm glad he was on board with doing that again and be able to just give more gratitude to his character. I feel like he was a little cut short in episode one, but this kind of fleshes out kind of, you know, how he, you know, his learnings and his, you know, his post-death journey, if you will. It seems like to me he's like, if he's not, you know, number two, he's like almost equally, you know, mash level Yoda, if you want to call it that. I mean, he seems like he's just like, he's been through all these trials we're about to see Yoda go through. And I kept thinking like, oh, he's done all this, you know, in a sense. You know, he explained that he didn't finish his training, but I don't know. It was just interesting to be able to hear his voice and lead Yoda, where not many other characters can.
Jason, what about you? Qui-Gon Jinn, he not only does he come back as with Liam Neeson, but some of the things he says and teaches us about the living Force that the Jedi are very much confused with. Ki-Adi Mundi says the dead are part of the cosmic Force and lose their individuality. Yet Liam Neeson is there to show that, no, that is in fact not the case.
Yeah, it was pretty kind of almost mind-boggling how when we first saw him back on in the Mortis arc, we didn't know if he was real. And no one believed that Obi-Wan Kenobi had spoken to Qui-Gon because of the events that happened at Mortis. Mm-hmm. So when we saw Qui-Gon in this episode, it really did kind of prove that Ki-Adi Mundi didn't have his facts straight, or he doesn't know all of the mysteries of the Force, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. And it also seems they actually kind of confirmed, too, that Mortis actually happened, as opposed to was it a dream state kind of a thing.
Yeah, definitely. By seeing him here, and I think for me, anyway, that acts as a confirmation that just happened in that way.
Yeah, and Yoda even and Anakin even talk about that in the courtyard, too. Which is really interesting. One of the other things that really struck me with Qui-Gon Jinn's turn, I think it's a beautiful scene that we see with it today, preview before Clone Wars Season 6 came out, where Yoda, when he hears him and Qui-Gon starts talking about the Force, Yoda floats up and he's in there, and it's almost like he's in utero and then he drops down. It's like he's changed his outlook on what the Force can possibly be. So I'm being all English teacher here with that. And then Mace does something troubling that seems to be one of his moves. He says, "We must keep an eye on our old friend." Okay, so Yoda's stressed. He's under duress. Everyone respects him and loves him and cares about him. Why don't they just ask him? Why do they have to spy on him?
Yeah, I felt that was a little bit, mind-boggling, I guess. I mean, where Mace is always seems like he's like, everybody's up to something, and we better not trust everybody.
Yeah.
That seems to be his character, though. I mean, that seems like that's his go-to thing, his go-to attitude. He doesn't trust a whole lot of people, and it takes a lot of people to basically show him that, okay, you can be trusted. Like the Jar Jar Binks arc, where they teamed up, and he had to like kind of prove himself to Mace, saying, I can do this, and I can kind of basically, you know, change your mind on things. So it's shows some growth on Mace's side. But I think, I mean, who wouldn't, you know, suspect Yoda of something? I mean, that's a little crazy, I think.
Well, do you think you suspected him, or was it more like, hey, we better keep an eye on him? Almost like he's like grandpa's in the corner and he's not feeling so well.
You know, I have to say, I kind of think that Mace, in a certain light, exemplifies the Jedi of the era.
Yeah.
With all their problems and all their glory in a certain way. But, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but at the very end of the episode, Yoda's like, I think I found a way for us to win, to get to victory at the end. Mm-hmm. And Mace can only think about the war. He's like, so is this going to help us win the war? And so you can see that Mace is always really about what's right in front of him.
Right, right.
You know, always the here and now. Yeah, kind of guy. And when we start to get into this more ethereal stuff and the stuff that's actually going to save the Jedi, Mace is not the man to help the Jedi on that path, I think.
Right. And it's almost, and I like that how you phrase that, Jason, because Yoda's very much about put your concentration on the here and now. And of course, Qui-Gon says that famously in episode one right off the bat.
Right.
But there's that wavering there and that lack of communication through all their communication, which they're constantly debating on all these things. I want to fast forward just a little bit to a scene which I thought was really lovely, which is the meditation scene where they all surround one another and time is passing by. It's almost like a strong prayer circle. I think this is as much spirituality as maybe we've ever seen with the Force concentrated. And Qui-Gon even says, you know, follow the light. The light will be your guide.
Yeah, I mean, that little scene where they all kind of gather in a circle is pretty powerful. I mean, it's almost like they're, you know,
a beautiful scene.
Combining their powers or, you know, gathering together. And it's, like you said, that's something we haven't seen yet at all. And you'll also notice that there's a time lapse.
Yeah.
And I don't think that sequence has been used as well. I mean, but then once they come out of the little circle, like, it seems like no time has passed at all. So it seems, you know, were they staying there for a night, a day? I mean, they didn't really necessarily...
Did anyone have to go to the bathroom?
You know, I think that sequence was probably inspired by House of Cards.
Really?
Yeah, the television show House of Cards has the very same kind of time-lapse kind of sequence going on. And it was starting to get really big as this episode was probably being written. It's just a guess on my part. But I found it kind of ironic that a show that's like all about politics, you know, and stuff like that was used in a way for Star Wars that was supposed to be more of a deeper metaphysical kind of prayer group almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And so it was kind of fun how I think they played with that. If that's what Stuart Lee was actually doing, the director of the episodes. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting to see that they tried to do something that they had done before, but it ultimately kind of fails them, right?
Well, yes and no. I guess it depends on how you determine what would be failing. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, they want to. I took from it that they essentially want to make almost like a conduit to be able to communicate,
right?
To be able to pull in to prove that Yoda hasn't lost his mind, and they don't walk away from that at that moment having done that.
True. And it almost shows you that. Obviously, Qui-Gon only picks one person to connect with on this. I mean, that's sort of difficult to say, but it is Yoda that, of course, he reaches out to, which makes sense. And then Yoda, in a fascinating turn of events, which we saw hints of this in Star Wars Weekends a few years ago, he turns to Anakin. And one of my favorite moments of this is he looks at Anakin and he says, "Your spontaneity is what sets you apart." And he seems to enjoy this aspect of Anakin being a bit rebellious when, of course, initially in episode one, he wasn't sure if we should even train Anakin because of his age and things of that nature. So Yoda and Anakin's relationship, Jason, what did we learn about this? What stuck out to you?
Yeah, I kind of think that once again, we have a kind of an interesting kind of dichotomy here with Mace Windu again, as we see Mace Windu becoming more distrustful of Anakin as the series goes on. And once we get to Revenge of the Sith, he straight out doesn't trust him. We have Yoda, who never even approved Anakin's training. The council approved it. He says he disagrees with it.
Yeah.
He doesn't think that Obi-Wan should be able to train him. And he is right, actually, because Obi-Wan doesn't actually fulfill the training in a way that does what Anakin needs. But Yoda is the one, you know, like I said, who said no to it. And now Yoda is starting to kind of see that there's a method in the madness of the way that Anakin works. And that's probably why he's willing to give Anakin that shot to go and do the right thing at the end of the day in Revenge of the Sith.
Hmm.
as opposed to just straight out stopping him. Because he thinks that this guy is the chosen one. And if he is, he's going to have to do this, this hero's journey. He's going to have to do it on his own eventually. So I can't stop him anyways.
Right.
So I kind of thought that was fascinating. And it was kind of a cool way to in a way, leave Anakin and Yoda. Or, there's other developments in this arc with Anakin and Yoda, but it was kind of a really cool way to leave things and then to pick up Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mace, and Mace, as soon as Yoda takes off in his incredibly awesome Jedi starfighter, Mace instantly looks at Anakin and blames him, and Yoda finds that amusing. Just got that look, like he's very impish in parts of this. Corey, how did you like Anakin and Yoda?
Yeah, that part where he had to kind of, cover for him in a sense, and he knew it'd work because they're used to Anakin, bumping authority and kind of going against the grain of the order. And I want to jump back just a little bit. I think Anakin in one part hears Qui-Gon as well. Mm-hmm. You guys remember that scene? And then I kind of thought, I was like, well, that's kind of interesting that he hears it and just seemed like, oh, that happens all the time.
Well, I thought he sort of like, did he hear it or was it just happening around him or did he hear it and then just sort of, you know what I mean? I know exactly right. What we're talking about. Jason, what do you think of that?
Yeah, it was kind of similar back to Attack of the Clones when he hears Qui-Gon saying, no, Anakin, no, or whatever. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. I got the impression that he hears Qui-Gon, maybe not often, but enough to recognize that something weird is going on.
Yeah, almost like your hair stick up on the back of your neck, but you're not sure why, kind of a thing.
Well,
yeah.
What makes me think, too, is like when they're doubting Yoda in that first portion of that episode, you'd think that in that scene where Anakin and Yoda together before he takes off, is like he would say, hey, I hear Qui-Gon Jinn as well, and relay some of that, the inner workings of what they're feeling as far as, hey, I've been there and I feel him too. And that seems like we talked about Yoda and Anakin's relationship. It's very, maybe strained in a sense because, like I said, Yoda doesn't trust him all, or not trust him, but, doesn't, think that he's ready become a Jedi all that much, and seems like that maybe that's the reason Anakin would be holding back. But then yet again, like you said, Dan, he uses Anakin in this and kind of smirks as he takes off, thinking, I pulled a fast one.
He lightens up a little bit, and then which almost makes you think, if you look at, we're talking about bridging this to episode 3, what happens to Yoda between this and episode 3? Because He's got these moments of whimsy and he's childlike in many ways, but then he's incredibly serious and you can just feel the weight of the world down on him. Yet at the end of this episode, he seems uplifted. And like you mentioned earlier, Jason, he says, no, maybe not to win the Clone Wars, but to win for all time.
Yeah, and the Jedi probably are in a state of, I guess you would say, paralysis by analysis.
Oh yeah,
with what's going on. They're trying to figure out who Darth Sidious is, how are they going to win this war, all this kind of stuff. And when they just kind of, Yoda just lets all that go after this arc and realizes that he has a path.
Yeah.
And I think when that happened, I kind of think that he kind of hits another plateau almost, where he's able to just to kind of, like I said, let go and realize that the events are going to unfold and hopefully he can stop them. But at the same time, if they don't, he has that ace up his sleeve.
True. And so the ace up his sleeve is his training. At least that helps to get him feel stronger. This is also the arc where we learn about there is another Skywalker, which of course now we know why Yoda knows that. At the end of the Empire, or towards the end of the Empire Strikes Back, we also learned that Dagobah is one of the purest places in the galaxy. Guys, why do you think Dagobah is one of the purest places in the galaxy?
I have no idea.
Man. Yeah, that is a great question that we've been wondering forever, even before this. I mean, like back when I used to watch Empire Strikes Back, like in the 80s, and you see Luke go down into the cave, and you see like that there's like an ancient structure or a spaceship, whatever it happens to be. Yeah. Like there's architecture in there, it's just Dagobah is full of mystery for me.
Mm-hmm. Corey, you have any theories? I have one.
Well, I mean, obviously there's no, you know, human life of any sort. So, I mean, I want to say it's connected to the Force in a living way. Maybe it's possibly, you know, they move on to, you know, like as he gets onto that planet and learns more about the Force, they talk about the living Force. I wonder if this is a living Force planet, and the secondary planet we see is the cosmic Force planet. So that's my theory.
Okay. Okay.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
That's smart, Corey.
Hey, yeah, you know, Corey. I try.
For me, the notion that it's the purest planet, I think it's the most untouched by technology and civilization. It's just very pure and natural. It's clearly a thriving ecological system. The sun's not out often, which I find interesting if you're supposed to go to the light for answers. So there's something there. There's obviously a lot of history to Dagobah, but I think it's just the pure nature of the planet. The fact that there's no violence, there's no war, there's no conflict. It's just a place where nature can be. And when you're truly a Jedi Master, you're able to just capture this essence of being and meditation. You see that probably nowhere better. I suppose you could argue other examples, but in episode one, at the end, when Qui-Gon and Darth Maul are in their epic duel and those shields close and they can't get to one another, Qui-Gon just sits there, calm as can be, meditating. He's not trying to be calm. He is calm. He is able to be, which is, I think, one of the reasons why George Lucas had to have him die rather more quickly, because I don't believe that Darth Sidious rises to power as quickly if Qui-Gon Jinn is still around.
I would buy into that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Qui-Gon was kind of a rogue and a rebel, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, when Dooku was subverted, he wasn't feeling unlike Qui-Gon in a lot of ways. Right. And as we've seen in now what is Legends, but, you know, stuff with from the Darth Plagueis novel, we kind of see that they knew that there was something wrong, and that the way that the Jedi were behaving was going in a way that wasn't correct, and the politics were corrupt, and that they were the servants of a republic that was kind of not really a good thing anymore. It had lost its way. And so with all that in mind, I totally agree that Qui-Gon would have branched out, and they would not have been able to have destroyed the Jedi like in an Order 66 kind of way. Because I don't think Qui-Gon would have served in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I don't either. I agree with that. I never thought about that, but that totally makes sense. Yeah. I can't imagine that he would. I don't think he joined the Separatists. I don't think you're saying that either. But he probably would have gone the way of Ahsoka, I would guess.
Exactly.
Wouldn't have been great to see he and Ahsoka teaming up?
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
That would be awesome. So let's talk about Yoda's trials. We could start at the end of the first episode of Voices. We're going into the second episode, which is clearly the bulk of his trials, I would say. What stood out to you guys about those things? And of course, we can talk about the Gollum Yoda if you want to.
He's rad.
Yeah.
He is rad.
Yeah, it was cool because, you know, just this trial to see Yoda go through that stuff and see him as a character and, you know, he would constantly be tested. And I could just, it just popped me right back into, you know, episode 5 after him fighting Dooku and being weak after every little trial that went on. You could see him physically becoming weak and falling to his knees and, you know, his out of breath. And it's just interesting to see that because I think I myself hold Yoda at such esteem as far as a Jedi and be able to, you know, nothing can get to him, get through to him. And he obviously goes through these trials to learn more about himself and how he can become better. And the Gollum Yoda was a great sequence. It was really well done animated wise, and I can tell that I can't think of his name. Tom Kane,
yes,
had a great time doing that dark Yoda voice.
Yeah, there were some people who critiqued that. I thought that was a fantastic scene. Yeah. I mean, yes, there are parallels there, and that's not by accident. I mean, they know what they're doing. They know how to tell a good story,
right?
But the thing that struck me about that whole second episode was that Yoda, on occasion, through his confidence, showed a little bit of arrogance.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Like you're saying, so you're saying like he would kind of, you know, give into the emotion part of it, you know, that sequence where he was kind of giving the emotion part, and he thought, no, I'm better than this.
Right. I mean, he has to give in. Yeah, well, I think he has to show some emotion because otherwise he becomes omniscient and there's no threat. There's right. no peril. But I think there are just times when he's talking about the fact that he is not afraid. Just the way that he carries himself. I don't know. There just seems to be a little bit of arrogance. It seems a little bit anti-Jedi. Just a hint. Just a hint.
How dare you?
You know,
how dare you?
What I liked about it was that the more he rejects the fact that he has this dark side to him, that, you know, he's human. He's a character, but he's you know, he's a little alien, but he's human. And the more that he rejects his humanity, the more it gets a hold of him.
Yes.
So it's only when he starts to say, you know what, I have this too. I have these feelings and these doubts and these fears. Like, that's part of me. And that's when he finally, like, conquers his hubris.
Right.
And that is a very big problem that the Jedi have with, you know, things like Anakin and even like things like love. They're really asking Anakin Skywalker to not be a human.
Yes.
To not love Padme, which he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point right there, I kind of think that that's where, in a way, Yoda starts to realize that he's going to have to shed his ancient Jedi teachings, that everything that they thought might be kind of wrong, because what he believed he was, he's not. He is a human being, to use no other word for it. I don't know what Yoda's called, but
true.
He's a person.
Yes.
And so, yeah. So anyways, he goes and he defeats that by acceptance. And yeah. that was really telling, because Yoda could have been really arrogant.
Yes.
Like 800 years old and knowing what he knows. And so it was a really cool character moment.
It really is, and I'm glad that you said that, because that's what I was hoping that we would talk about. The whole second episode is all about him conquering hubris, because he's in a position where he's the most powerful Jedi around, and even Darth Sidious is a little bit afraid of him, as we see at the end of the third one. No, Yoda's too powerful. You know, they realize yet again in Darth Sidious, especially as long as Yoda is focused and his concentration isn't split into 1,000 different places, I don't think we can succeed. He does conquer his hubris and his pride, because you have to ask yourself, what is someone like Yoda afraid of? And it just makes sense that someone who's that powerful, that intelligent, he could be afraid of if he were to turn dark, or not necessarily turn dark, but just to kind of give into these, as you said, Jason, these human emotions. Let's talk about the five spirits, the five... I don't know what do you want to call them.
They call them priestesses.
The priestesses, yes, priestesses, of course. I was going to say muses. What did you guys think about them, and how do they add to bringing Yoda to fruition?
Go ahead, Jason.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say it was interesting that they were all different emotions. Obviously,
yeah.
I mean, I had a hard time grasping on to, you know, are they alien and they've conquered the Force and they're not a living Force? Are they part of the Force? Are they the Force manifested?
They're like Qui-Gon, but
right.
with fancy masks.
Well, that and their little hanging, you know, ET feet at the bottom there. But it was interesting to have them manifest as they did, and it was interesting that they all had different emotions.
You know what I just thought of when you said that?
Sure.
The quote about the ET feet. Yoda's feet are kind of like that. What if these are all physical manifestations of different aspects of him, like kind of id, ego, superego, plus a couple more thrown in for good measure?
That's interesting, but yeah, I don't know. Could be.
Well, I mean, once again, it goes back to kind of being human. Serenity, anger, confusion, joy, sadness, those are our emotions.
You bet.
And so, you know, someone like Yoda, once again, he kind of comes off as if he's above it, and the Jedi certainly do.
Yes.
They think that there should be one state, should be this calm, that's it, and there's no emotion, there's only the Force kind of stuff. And the fact of the matter is, anger, confusion, sadness, joy, and serenity exist.
That's right. And to suppress them, it only causes problems. Let's just ask Anakin.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point.
So, go ahead,
I was going to say real quick, the scene where he goes through the tunnel, and that's the deal with each of the five emotions. And and the Ahsoka death. Could we talk a little bit about that and Yoda's reaction to that?
Yeah, a beautiful scene where he's having a hard time. He blames himself. A good leader always takes responsibility. And a good leader also realizes that they can't do it all. It's like the Sith do think they can do it all. They do think they can master death and conquer death to the degree. And, you know, Darth Maul, of course, stays alive through something traumatic that no one could possibly live through. But he does because of his anger
mm-hmm.
and his hubris. The Sith constantly are saying you can't there is nothing after death. You have to master the current, whereas someone good and wise and pious says no, what is important now is being connected with the Force. So Yoda has that intense moment where I have failed. Look at all these people that I have failed. Even Darth Tyrannus, Count Dooku, was there as someone that he mm-hmm. considers that he may have failed perhaps in the recesses of his mind.
Yeah, it was interesting that scene that with the Jedi Temple there.
Yeah,
and even they showed Qui-Gon Jinn in that episode or that little sequence as well.
Yes, yes,
saying maybe he failed him as well. So it's interesting that you brought that up. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's like he failed them, and then it's also the fact that he's seeing all of these people again. It's what he wants back. It's what he wishes he could undo.
Yes,
in a way, and that kind of wishing that he could have almost like that perfect Jedi day that he has, and in that little vision is kind of telling psychologically what's up with Yoda, you know, like who is on his mind, who makes it into his top 20, if you will,
yes.
people that he misses, and you know they're not people from 756 years ago; they're people from like the last 20 years,
right? They're not green.
Yeah.
Right.
There are people he feels like he has a strong connection with that he could have possibly considered that he failed, which, of course, I think you could argue that he didn't. Everyone chooses their path in Star Wars, whether they're manipulated to choose that path or not. But there's so much of this is about the nature of the Force. And really, we could just have Jason back on again to just talk about the Force. That could be one of our topics at Coffee with Kenobi. We learn a lot, quite a lot about the Force. A lot of it in the first episode. I'm just going to throw out a couple of things, guys, for you to marinate on. The Force says there are two parts. Qui-Gon says there are two parts to the Force. Living beings generate the living Force, which in turn powers the wellspring, which is the cosmic Force. And then he goes on to say, all energy from the living Force, from all things that have ever lived, feeds into the cosmic Force, binding everything and communicating to us through the midichlorians. Because of this, I can speak to you now. Okay. Mind officially blown. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about this. I think there are a lot of avenues you could take this. If living beings generate the living Force, which powers the cosmic Force, that to me... lessens the spiritual side of the Force if it comes from us and we're the living beings. Well, then, were people in Star Wars who are living, are they created or are they all miniature gods that generate this Force that becomes a cosmic Force because our spiritual essence has nowhere to go? I mean, there are a lot of interesting, confusing things here, but it does actually make midichlorians make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, it does. And it definitely, I mean, I wrote down my notes here. I wrote down a life force and then an arrow up to a cosmic force and then an arrow down to midichlorians and arrow back over to life force after midichlorians. So it's a big circle in a sense. That's kind of how I saw it as I was watching these episodes. And I mean, it kind of brings everything together a little bit for me as you know, kind of sorting this out in my mind. And it was just fascinating to be able to think about it that way.
And so it doesn't confuse you about whether the force is spiritual or comes from... something organic?
No. When watching it, it is very organic based, I think, as they explained it. But then it moves into a spiritual based, call it. I don't want to cover religion, but
really, what's more religious than this arc? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because if you were to take this from a Christian perspective, God creates man, right? Spiritual creates living. In this, Qui-Gon says, living beings generate the living force, which in turn powers the wellspring, which is the cosmic force. So here, humans create the spiritual avenue.
But Qui-Gon would say that. Qui-Gon's the midichlorian guy.
like in a way, it's kind of like a chicken and egg kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, and depending on how you look at it, like if you're looking at it at for almost a creation myth, if you will, mm-hmm. if you're trying to get that, then it becomes really confusing.
Yes,
but I think in terms of like Qui-Gon Jinn, especially when he was alive, his whole thing, he would look at it that way because that's how he is tapped into it. It doesn't mean that like the Force didn't exist before life. Mm-hmm. But Qui-Gon almost, in a way, I think, almost thinks that life might, or the Force might be irrelevant without life.
Which is pretty cool. Which is like sort of saying that the spiritual aspect, it's there, but without the four living beings to interact with, it takes on a different kind of a meaning because of the nature of existence and the nature of knowing, the nature of basically knowing who you are or who you are and how you contribute to the world. It's almost like a big Lion King thing, isn't it?
Right. And you know, there's a lot about the will of the Force in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And without life, what is the meaning behind will if there's no life?
Mm-hmm.
So you almost need life for the Force to actually even matter.
Right.
Go on.
I was going to say, if this is true, then even though Qui-Gon is at a separate plane of existence, this ethereal plane, then if he's just taking this from his point of view, then going to becoming one with the living Force doesn't make you omniscient or all-knowing. Because if we're saying that Qui-Gon is only saying this because this is his bias, then he's still very human and therefore not open to learning more and being connected to the spiritual avenue and the spiritual side of things. He still has his own human agenda, which makes it not spiritual at all.
Well, and he hasn't finished his training either.
Right. That's, yeah. I was going to say he hasn't finished
his
training.
Good point. Good
and
point.
He also, I mean, I think that if he's within this ethereal plane or what you want to call it, he's not, you know, he's not allowed to give out the secrets, if you will. You know, he could have just told Yoda everything and said, well, no, you need to experience this on your own.
Great point. Yeah, so the mentor, the guide, can't give all the answers to the hero. Otherwise, there's no journey that they experience. All right, have a good night, everybody.
No, I agree. That was good.
Just blew my mind, man.
Yeah, mind blown.
and I think that sometimes there is perhaps the potential to over-examine, but come on. This is Coffee with Kenobi. You know, no such thing. I think there's so many questions that are generated from this, and I think it makes it even more powerful, at least to me, and I'm sure you both would agree. This was very much said many times, as this was George Lucas's final declaration of what the Force is for him and for the Star Wars universe. So it makes me dissect things even more than I normally would, because I know George Lucas is putting his stamp on this. I feel like this is much less ambiguous than it appears.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would also take it a step further, and not to get too far off topic, but mm-hmm. like in Star Wars Rebels, we've seen some of how Ezra experiences the Force.
Yeah.
And in a way, like George Lucas, he gave us exactly what it is, exactly his conceptualization of it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be all the characters' experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like Ezra and Kanan in Star Wars Rebels have a very different experience with the Force and how they, you know, how they deal with it and how they come to use it than the prequel era Jedi,
right,
and the stuff that George Lucas laid out.
Well, at the very end, Qui-Gon says, you will learn to preserve your life force and so manifest a consciousness which will allow you to commune with the living after death. And I think that's an important part, that article there, a consciousness, not the consciousness. So this is just a part of you. So maybe, again, as Qui-Gon is continuing his journey and his continual training, this is just a small part of him too, where he's very much coming to an amount of self-awareness, even when he's at the spiritual plane, which, again, begs the question, how much can you know?
Yeah, and they clearly, even by Return of the Jedi, might not actually know everything or what they should know about it.
Right.
Luke, I think, still surprises them in Return of the Jedi.
Yes. Even after Obi-Wan, who's, again, in contact with the living Force, even he doesn't quite know it all either. I think that's a very important part of the original trilogy, so I'm glad that you brought that up, that even though you are connected with the Force and have manifested your consciousness, there's still things that you don't know. So that just shows you that there's either more to the Force
And there's another level to it, which would probably stand to reason. Or it's, again, just through how much we feed it through our life essence as well. We probably belabored that point. I'd be interesting to see what people say about this. I want to move quickly. And, Cord, do you have anything more to say about the Force?
Well, I wanted to mention, I know you're going to move on to the third episode. And instantly, he gets on to Moriban and he encounters a Sith. And the first thing they say regarding the Force and, the afterlife or, getting into that, it says there's nothing after death. They're like the complete opposite.
Yes.
So I found that interesting that as much as they embody self-preservation, that they, it's the complete opposite of what the second episode was all about.
Yeah, because they have they're the perfect foils because they have no faith.
Yep.
Their faith is in themselves and their own selfish nature and the power coming from within themselves, whereas when you were a Jedi or you're on the good side of the Force, the light side of the Force, which could be short for enlightenment, you realize that there is something else working together. I would wager that the Sith and Darth Sidious and all of his happy little friends with their red eyes, I would wager that they would find this all to be ridiculous and absurd. And I want to change gears a little bit. I want to talk about trees. Is this a tree podcast? Not at all. But there are different elements of trees, and it's okay. In the first episode, when Anakin is talking to Yoda, you've got the tree there that he's standing by. And if you notice the condition of the branches, it looks like it's fall. Things are dying, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the second episode, the tree's dead. That's winter, okay? And then at the end of the third episode, the very last shot that we see, the leaves are coming back, and it's spring, and life is coming back. So if you're going to take the symbolism of the tree and compare it to Yoda, that makes sense. It certainly isn't springing back to the rebellion because there is no rebellion at that point. The Republic is about to die a very painful death. So you could argue that when it's coming back to life, it's either Yoda's reawakening of what he needs to do, or it could be the awakening of the Empire. But I find that to be hard to believe, too. I read a lot into trees.
Yeah, I think it's more along the lines of Yoda's awakening of what he needs to do and what he needs to carry out to be able to move forward. And it seems like he was struggling with that, obviously, in the beginning of the first episode, where to go. And he's hearing voices and he has no direction. And by the end of the overall arc, obviously there's a bloom of hope. And I, Qui-Gon Jinn says, there's always hope. So that was an interesting phrase, too. So.
Well, isn't it cool too? Aren't there three little leaves, and there's like a little seed in the middle?
Yeah.
So, do you think those might be significant of anything? I mean, three in literature is always significant. It symbolizes a Trinity. But what would the Trinity be for this? I mean, we've got Luke, we've got Leia. What would the third one be?
Would be Anakin.
Perhaps, yeah. And perhaps, then the middle is what they all create together, perhaps. I don't know.
Right. I mean, it's clearly, it has a lot to do with rebirth.
Yes.
Even in the arc itself, Yoda is reborn, essentially. We're going to have Anakin reborn. We hear the birth of the Skywalker twins in the audio. Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
And
Yoda's even in a little water tube that he bursts out of.
Right. Right. And to go back to it, we have this kind of like rebirth motif going on, and for Yoda that is important because that's hope. Looking at what he leaves, in the visions that he has and in fighting Sidious and all that kind of stuff, that hope really, really, truly probably matters. And not having Yoda just give up and know that what he's done and these trials have mattered and that there is a path for the Jedi that isn't the destruction that he probably knows is coming in some way or another, that he knows a rebirth is coming.
Right. I agree with that. And that seed is obviously, life will continue. Life will go on. There will be hope in the galaxy, which of course, episode 4, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
So you're looking at, if we want to look at the symbolism of the trees, did you guys notice that too, by the way, when I was rambling, did you catch that when you're watching these shows? The whole thing with the tree.
No, I didn't see that until you said that. I didn't. I mean, I noticed the tree in the beginning and the little open park area there in the beginning when they talked to Anakin. And then it's in the I think it's in the
it's in the second one at the end.
Second one. Well, yeah, the second one where I thought it was in the second one where he's got all his, all the, they all walk down.
Yeah, his boys.
In the vision, his guys.
B-O-Y-Z, yeah.
Yeah. They all talk, you know, lights down on the tree, and they all kind of fade away, and I think the tree fades away too, and you know, Dooku's standing left there, and then at the course at the end there. I like your connection. It's really good.
The Sith, particularly when they go to Moriband, I love that they appear as snakes. I mean, talk about biblical.
Yeah.
And then they say, like you mentioned, Cora, that there is no life after death. And I like that the spirit warns Yoda, be careful for what they offer. The Sith will certainly feel like an answer. That this is like the classic good versus evil choice. You know, what kind of choice are you going to make? Evil always presents a very pleasing form, a pleasing shape. Clearly the snake's not the option. But then it shows him, Sifo-Dyas, which is the first time we ever hear him talk. Canonically, and he says, you know, release me. I can tell you who the person is in the Sith. Do we learn the name? Does Yoda learn the name Darth Sidious in episode 2? He does, doesn't he?
I don't remember.
For some reason, I was watching this last night, and I was thinking, okay, when did we learn the name Darth Sidious? When did Yoda learn that name?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blanking out. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure people listening will probably know that right off the bat. Yoda says the Sith are captivated by the physical realm. And then, of course, we get to see Darth Bane, who, even though Mark Hamill voices him, completely I would not know that if I didn't see that in the credits.
What did you think about that? Did you think it was a cool opportunity, or do you think it was kind of a missed opportunity to really hear Mark Hamill do a really interesting voice? Because it was very had lots of reverb and echoes and delays on it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you asked that, because I thought about that too. What's going on here? Because it's not Mark Hamill. I mean, that's obviously it is him, but that's by design that they want him to sound a little different. He's such an incredibly gifted voice actor. Anyway, I don't think it was a missed opportunity, because I think there's a lot of symbolism there too. The very first Sith that establishes this, easy for me to say. Then of course it becomes Luke Skywalker, or at least the actor does. No, I don't think it was a waste at all. I thought it was pretty cool, because I don't know how much time he has, and I'm pretty sure that he recorded that quite a few years ago. So who knows how much time he even had for that kind of thing. I it worked for me. What about you, Corey?
Yeah, I think it was pretty cool. I mean, like you said, Jason, it's got a lot of layers to it. But I think they're really trying to do that just to make it obscure a little bit. I mean, you can read in the credits that it's him, but they don't want folks thinking, oh, that was him? Does that mean something? You know, people like us will read into it. So, right, Dan?
Yeah. Well, what about, did you think it was a waste, Jason, or how did it work for you?
No, well, in terms of when I very first watched the episode, I didn't know if Mark Hamill was the snakes before. Or if it was Darth Bane. I wasn't actually sure, because he could have really done either. So in terms of knowing it's Mark Hamill, no, it wasn't a waste. But at the same time, when you finally do hear it, it's like, oh, okay, this character worked for me. Darth Bane as the ghost or whatever he was worked for me. But I was a little bit like a little taken back by it, on the fact that I really wanted to hear Mark Hamill. Like, I wanted to hear it, you know?
Yes.
And it works fine. It's not there. They did everything perfectly.
Oh, but yeah. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. I was just like a little bit like, I wish there was a little bit less effects so I could hear the voice a little clearer.
Wouldn't it be cool to see, like, if, you know, season 6 comes out on Blu-ray and we get to see behind the scenes, we get to see that recording session.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
That would be really awesome. I hear something not so awesome. Let's get to the final duel here with Sidious, which is very cool. There's two things that really pop up to me about this, and feel free to say kind of what you guys think about that as well. But Yoda says the way to end the war is to execute the Sith. Now, Yoda is a man who is centered. He is focused. And the Jedi are peacekeepers, right? They don't want to start a war, but the way to end this is to execute? And that's problematic.
He's wrong. Because executing the Sith is not how they vanquish them in the end. It's the love of a father to a son that ends up actually getting rid of the Sith.
But then, and vis-a-vis creating balance.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically getting rid of the cancer, the spiritual cancer in the galaxy.
Oh, I like that. Spiritual cancer. That's good stuff. That's good stuff, Jason Ward.
Thank you.
What about you, Corey? He wants to execute the Sith. I mean, he even says that, you know, of course, in Return of the Jedi, doesn't he, before he passes on?
Does he say execute?
He doesn't say execute.
I think
no.
He says
he says you must
face or confront.
You must confront Vader. And then Obi-Wan says mm-hmm. What is it? I can't think of the exact wording that Obi-Wan says in Return of the Jedi.
You must face your father again.
Doesn't he say you must destroy Darth Vader?
Maybe it's destroy.
Can't
so maybe maybe he meant destroy Darth Vader as Darth Vader versus Anakin Skywalker. So
well, that's a very positive way to look at it. And I Thank like you. That.
Well, hey, you know. Yeah, my thoughts on Yoda and that little sequence there. You know, it's interesting because he's cut into that scene really quickly, and he's almost like, "What's going on?" And he's been through these trials this entire time. So I'm thinking he's like, "This is just another sequence of events that." You know, they're putting through me through a trial, and you talked about him being kind of, you know, above that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he knew that, and he just kind of made that remark of having to execute the Sith, you know, just knowing that this is all a facade.
Well, that's pretty strong language are you saying that when you say facade, you're saying he doesn't really mean that?
No, I'm saying it as the fact that he knew the whole – the playing out of the vision he was in, they were tracking down, Dooku had broken mm-hmm. the ranks or whatever. He's kind of like, oh, wait, is this for real? Where am I right now? And Anakin's like, you've led this mission, and he doesn't know where he's at. So I thought he was thinking, okay, I'm in this nerd trial sequence, and here we go again. Let's just get this, you know, let's take care of this and see what I learned from this. So I want to say, he might have said execute in order to, you know, move things along, or I don't know. Yeah,
could be, but then he would unlearn what he had learned, right?
Right. True. That's very true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty telling that he's in like a military situation at that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I did too. You know? In those Republic gunships.
Right.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting as well. And then I think it's cool that this enlightenment, The spirit says this is very powerful stuff. He says, or she says, it is enlightenment, spirit, balance. There is another Skywalker. And there's your four right there, actually. If we're going to go back to numbers and the leaves, mm-hmm. You've got enlightenment, yeah. spirit, balance. In the middle is another Skywalker.
There you
I,
mean, go.
I don't,
that
I don't know that is certainly what they interpreted it as, but hard to say. But I think that's a possibility.
What did you think of you? We talked about the, you know, the battle between Sidious and Yoda,
yeah.
And Anakin and Yoda rush in the room there, and the clone troopers are, you know, knocked down, and mm-hmm. Anakin takes on Dooku, and that battle was cool.
And cuts off his head.
Yeah, he executes him, and Yoda says no. Very telling, obviously, of episode
foreshadowing.
Three, foreshadowing, yeah. mm-hmm. And I think right there even was, you know, showing how much of a dream sequence this was for Yoda. He's kind of like saying, you know, it's yeah, he's envisioning these things. Are these going to happen? Are these not going to happen? I don't know. And then we get into the duel with Yoda and Sidious, and Anakin joins that battle, which I was impressed about that. And he joined that.
The criticism I've heard about this is that one of the most powerful things about Revenge of the Sith is that Yoda and Darth Sidious fight for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true anymore.
Right.
They do fight, and I mean, this is sort of like a dream. Is this a dream sequence thing too? I mean, Darth Sidious does say, you know, we have to leave. He's too powerful. I mean, obviously, I don't know what happened, guys.
Well, in Revenge of the Sith, I mean, that's their physical battle. That's them actually going one-on-one True. Physically. Mm-hmm. This is a spiritual battle. You know, you have Darth Sidious doing that magic with Dooku's blood in there. And
voodoo,
you
yeah. know,
yeah, voodoo, basically. And so it's two different kinds of fights. But at the same time, this is like always in motion is the future kind of thing. Like he's seeing what's going to happen. Like everything that happens in those fights happens in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like he's throwing the bridges at him, and that's like the ascent. We mm-hmm. see Dooku get the head cut off in the same way, and you know, and Anakin, when he does it, says, I'm better than this. I shouldn't have done that, or something like that. And so we see that all of those kinds of things play out, but they just play out slightly differently. And it's really kind of cool because it goes to show you what could Yoda have done. You know, he knew that if the stuff was going to happen and that it was coming, but look at what Yoda knew and then look at what happened. I mean, it's different, but it's very much the same. So Yoda's in a hard
place. This scene, though? I mean, does he remember this after this episode is said and done? Does he remember all this stuff, or is this kind of like a Force vision?
I would imagine in Revenge of the Sith, Yoda is full of deja vu. and if you that notice in the film, not that they knew this happened when they made the film, but in the film, you know, like when Obi-Wan wants to go to the security recordings and wants to see what happened and stuff, Yoda's just like, there's no reason to bother with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew that these things were going to happen. Mm-hmm. There was nothing they could have done about it, really. I mean, it was Anakin's failure and then strangely his success in Return of the Jedi, but there was nothing he can do. We just really get a strong sense of the catch 22, damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation Yoda was in, I think. Does that make sense?
That's really good. I like that.
Yeah, and even more fun is that now I'm even more confused about you know, that whole last sequence, because obviously Count Dooku was there. Obviously, he gives that drop of blood, you know, more symbolism. And then it's over. And then why don't the Jedi do this? Why don't they take like a reddish cloak and put it over everybody's face on Coruscant and say, you know, let's do a little lineup here? Why? I mean, it still intrigues me how the dark side clouds things so much that they can't see what's right in front of their faces.
Let me ask you guys this. After seeing, you know, Sidious's plans fail, he says Yoda's too strong. Was this a plan A for them?
And I think Anakin, it was one that just sort of, I think it just sort of popped up as a bonus. Oh, we've got an opportunity to strike a fatal blow to the Jedi Order. You know,
he does say that to
Yoda.
Him,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, guys, before we wrap up, and anything else you want to say? I mean, I feel like there's so many things that we truly, hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, I think Jason got disconnected.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah, so is there a problem with the call? Hold on, we'll try to get the call back. Pretty good stuff, huh?
No, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. Pretty heavy. I think I threw a lot of wrinkles in there. I think I overthought on this one maybe more than any of other. It's pretty easy to do that.
Well, no, I don't think there's any overthinking about it. I mean, I have some thoughts at the end here.
Good. Yeah, we'll
so get I'll bring that. It up when
we basically have like 16. We may even have to call him back to do the five questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I, you know, be late, but let's hang up and try to call back. Okay.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey.
He looks like he's still trying to connect or something.
Let's see.
Jason, you there? I'll text him.
Yeah, for some reason it just dropped off. It was sounding fine. At the beginning, you were a little bit garbled. That's why I couldn't hear your questions.
Oh, the whole thing or just...
No, just towards the beginning. It was a little bit... I'll have to clean it up when I go back in.
Garbly, garbly, goo.
Garbly, gook.
I try to call him again. Enter group call. On Skype. Pretty awesome guest, huh?
Yeah, he's awesome. He's really good. He has some good thoughts there.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hey,
sorry about that.
No problem.
The internet just decided to die.
Rebirth. Oh, that's good. Hey, rebirth. Yeah, speaking of.
There you go.
Perfect. Well, this is what we're thinking. It's 9:46.
Okay.
Let's wrap up final thoughts. And then, you know, if you're not able to do this, I understand, but maybe we can do our other interview with Chris. And then can we come back and get the five questions from you? Is that cool?
Oh, sure. No problem at all.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure your little one's probably asleep by now, or...
It's only 7 here, but 7
oh,
here,
that's right.
So it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, not a problem though.
Okay.
Yeah, we're supposed to go out and get dinner after we're done though. So how long do you think it would be?
Oh, you know what? Let's just hammer through now.
Are you
yeah.
sure?
Yeah.
Oh, I think we can hammer. Yeah. There's one word questions anyway. They're pretty simple.
Yeah, you're doing us a huge favor just by being on and being awesome anyway. So we're not going to take you away from getting dinner. Okay, so let's get back to it. All right, guys. So, final thoughts on this particular arc.
Yeah, my final thoughts. Just the ending scene was very telling as far as Yoda and the whole arc itself and his trials and what he learned and how he became more involved with the Force and I think that it seems like he understands the Clone Wars won't be the way out of this this war and. I think that he seems like he has this all-knowing power now, and it seems like, well, not all-knowing, I guess. He seems that he has an edge. You talked about an ace up his sleeve. This might be a way of saying, maybe this is the route I was trying to take. Everybody was trying to take so hard and making it, difficult for ourselves. And now there's something else going on. And I think he knows more what's going on with everything. And I feel it feels like he's like, well, it just has to be what it is, and we're going to go on from there. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got out of it.
What about you, Jason? Final overall reflections on this?
Yeah, I just thought it was a really beautiful story, and it was told with Yoda, which is really unique because he's like a little green guy. You wouldn't think that you could tell this kind of deep story with a character. That's just a little green guy. And, Yoda at the very end figures out that the Clone Wars are probably lost already. He realizes that there's just a better way. And in that kind of sense, there's a bittersweetness to it. And there's a bittersweetness to it as the end of the Clone Wars television series, too. And he just knows that, they have a way towards ultimate victory. And it's not the way that the Sith think it is. And he has, like I said, that ace up his sleeve. And then when it ends on that little fade out at the end, it's like, same thing as the yeah. Ahsoka arc. The Ahsoka arc ended that way too, and it's just like, okay, here's, in a way, when I watch it though, I'm like, wow, it's kind of cool that the Ahsoka arc ended like that, and then this gets a second chance. It's once again back to that whole rebirth kind of theme, and it's just really, really cool. And then we got the chance to hear the Skywalkers crying, at least, as they're being born, and that was just such a powerful moment to see that the Clone Wars are ending for us. But that there's something else out there, and it's starting now. And it just I just loved it in terms of this greater Star Wars saga and the implications.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a powerful, beautiful arc. It as always opens up a lot of doors and really makes you think even more about the Force and the spiritual side of the Force versus the midichlorians and how they're all tied together. The animation, the music. Just getting to see more about Yoda and what makes him tick just makes us just fantastic. And as you guys both said, this is something that needs to be included in a box set because it's just phenomenal, just all the different ways that it goes. I encourage everyone who is, and we said this about the last couple of arcs too, but this one, this is probably the cherry on top of the sundae that is the Clone Wars, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, so Jason, we certainly can't have you have a cup of coffee with us without asking you our 5 questions. So
all right.
I'll just ask you the first one. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
My favorite Star Wars movie is Revenge of the Sith.
Good pick.
Thank you.
Your favorite character?
My favorite character is easily R2-D2.
Really?
Which we never talked about in the Yoda arc, but...
No,
he was great.
He was awesome.
He was always there. He's always helping find that adorable little spaceship.
Hmm.
I mean, R2, he takes care of business. He's reliable. He's always doing cool stuff, And as a kid, that silver dome was just got me. I wanted that action figure so bad. That's kind of one of the things that hooked me into Star Wars. So it's all about R2 for me.
That's awesome. And he calls him my little friend like 1,000 times in this episode. So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Ooh, this is my favorite line of dialogue. This might be kind of cheap, I don't know, but I have a bad feeling about this. I love it every time it comes on in any of the films. It doesn't matter which one it is. It's funny. It's not. It's overplayed now, but it's funny. And so every single time I hear it, I'm just like, ha, there it is.
Yeah, it's certainly a comedic element, you know, that brings the scene, you know, a lightness to the scene. And of course, like you said, it's iconic. So,
yeah.
So, Jason, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
You know, right now, my favorite collectible I own is actually that giant X-Wing fighter that just came out.
Really?
Oh, cool.
Jonna Marie Macias, who does the podcast with me, she bought that for me for my birthday. And it is huge and it is fun. And I have chased my 10-month-old baby around the house with it. And it's hilarious, too. It's really great. I highly recommend anyone get one if they have the room.
That's it. You know, I was just looking at that the other day. And I was kind of weighing the pros and cons because it doesn't do anything electronically, but it's just cool.
It is. It's just rad. I kind of want to get out paint sometimes and just like start actually like customizing it. But
yeah,
I can't do it, but I want to.
That's pretty awesome. Okay, so our next question for you. Oh, I just lost it.
Uh oh.
That's all right. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
You know, for me, it's family. At the end of the day, Star Wars is about the films anyways, are about the Skywalker family. And they're a messed up family.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, it's like I think we all have family members that we don't click with, that we don't get along with, that are maybe wrong or that we just have these problems with. And in a certain way, Star Wars kind of deals with that aspect of real life in a way that we could all kind of acknowledge. Whether you have a father that you just don't get along with that much, you're like, oh, I get Darth Vader. Or whether it's like you actually have Darth Vader as your father. There's just a lot to identify with in terms of family and the way that it plays out. And at the end of the day, kind of everything works itself out, you know, and it ends up being friends and family. And I don't think those themes ever get tired or old. And the conflict that leads to the resolution of like the happiness at the end of Return of the Jedi. So, yeah, for me, it's family.
Well said. Well said. Now, a lot of folks know you from your podcast, Making Star Wars and makingstarwars.net. So where else can folks get in touch with you online?
On Twitter, I am at Making Star Wars, and that's probably the best way.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're like a Twitter ninja. You're awesome.
I am.
I should say a Twitter Jedi Knight, shouldn't I?
There you go.
Yeah, or a Twitter Sith Lord, depending on how mean I am that day. But yeah, Twitter is definitely the best way to interact with me. And you can go to makingstarwars.net. And if you go there, there's all kinds of ways to interact with me and leave comments on the stories and make me angry, that kind of stuff.
No, that's great. Well, Jason, it was such a delight to finally have you on. We should have done this so much sooner, and we clearly look forward to chatting with you again and frequently, and hopefully have you on for Rebels reactions and for whatever else is going on. Thank you so much for what you do for the Star Wars universe and fandom and for our show too. You've been really kind to our show, and we appreciate that.
Thank you guys, and you guys have to come on now. This is podcasting.
That'd Absolutely. Be awesome.
Yeah,
I really had a great time, so thanks for having me on, and I'll come on anytime you guys need me.
Sweet.
Thank you so much, my friend. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Have a good night, you guys.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.